Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, immaculate.
Now listen to this. I'll tell you about the heartache. I'll tell you about the heartache and the
loss of God.
I'll tell you about the hopelessness, the meager food from those forgot. I'll tell you about the maiden with wrought iron soul.
Alright, it's been that kind of day, so let's dance. Denial here on an EXO night. Oh, the Shakira. She's jumping around. She's got like a mutated thing going on. She's like a funky. I think she's doing like a Britney Spears thing on this video. I don't know what it is. The hair is unbelievable. The hips, forget it. Anyway, there you go. A little loca, loca, loca. I gotta save that for the end. That is absolutely exquisite. Anyway. Thanks for joining us here on Summertime. I'm your host, Dr. Mark, and I'm going to call to participate. 3.5 years. I want people to participate in the freaking show, but I'm in podcast hell here. Podcast hell. Podcast. Kind of combine Costco with podcast. Anyway, number to call 646-478-4847. 646-478-4847. Might have some surprise guests tonight. I don't know what's out there. I'm really just, I'm at the point of ducking when it comes to the world the last couple of days. It's been very turbulent in my little neck of the woods. As you know, the cocoa, we are now posto. Done with the cocoa. We are now in production for the cocoa holiday video, Cocoa Christmas. We had an absolute wall-to-wall just, panorama of things going on over the weekend in Bridgeport. I might get into that to start the show. I don't know. Kind of feeling a little funky here because I'm in a baseball mode. I'm in a real hate mood. I'm fresh off of basically a Frank Russo mugging last night on the New York Baseball Digest show that I'll play for you guys in a bit. Just incredible, the sensitivities that go on in October in New York. Monday we waved Omar and Jerry goodbye as they were both relieved of their duties. Although they're not fired anymore. You're relieved of your duties as general manager and manager of the New York Metropolitans, respectively. And the search begins. But to me, the search begins and ends with one man. One man. And that is Wally B. Not Bobby V. Wally B. And why Wally B? You know, the simple reason is that sometimes, as Frank advised me, You need to bring your friends into a dark alley. Because what's in there is a pack of rat bastards in Philly, a bunch of mofos down in Atlanta, and a bunch of sniping little snakes down in Florida, and then every once in a while, these Sunday softball players in Washington rise up and beat us. I hate our whole division. I'm talking Mets here, if you haven't noticed. And so we need to get some a little bit of a pit bull to go in there with us, because Jerry wasn't about to do that. And Omar, pretty much we've run our course with him. All right, I can't handle his onto ways anymore. So we need someone to go in there to face the Batman, please.
You filthy criminals.
And by filthy, I mean Philadelphia, because otherwise we're just going to get basically the same result we got with the Braves for all those years when they won the division like a million times in a row, because they've got these they call it H2O now. You know, with Holiday and Oswalt and the Hamels. Hamels, we beat his ass like four times this year. So anyway, Monday was the Met funeral, and they had the two owners out there basically giving their sort of act of contrition. And the search begins. But to me, it begins and ends with one man, Wally Beckman. Second baseman, Wally Beckman. I love to have Keith Jackson announce it when he gets hired. Wally Beckman, one word. It's like that jerk in John Miller with Beltran, Carlos Beltran. Anyway, so I had to sit through this stupid Holiday no-hitter, wincing. But, you know, I don't even feel bad. To me, he's not a legitimate Philly. He's not Victorino. He's not even, you know, Hamels, who's a punk. He's not Lidge, who's just, to me, this lucky bastard. You know, Holiday's the best pitcher in the game. So the fact that he, you know, took advantage of some free swingers from Cincinnati, yeah, so be it. Cincinnati's goal has got to be to win the series in four, so they got to run the table now. They're not winning game five in Philly. No way, no how. The other series, you know, I put up with Frenchie getting his double there and scoring. So hang on a second. I got to cough. Actually, I think I have that on tape. Maybe not. I haven't used it enough, so it's not there. It's too bad. But anyway, listen to this. Let's see. Yeah, there you go.
Boozy, boozy, bop, titty bop.
Anyway, as I was saying, the Rangers are the Rangers. I don't look at them. In baseball, it's like they're such a Neptune kind of a thing. Ooh. CeCe just plunked Tomei. Until they're front and center down in the boogie down, I don't look at them as a serious contender. Let the Rays and the Rangers just settle out. You know what we're going to do here, because the series that matters to me is being played right now in at Tarjay Field in Minneapolis. Here is the woe-begotten Twinkies, almost sort of Met-like and Red Sox-like. In their almost but not quite sort of affect they've taken on the last number of years. You know, face off against the big, bad, gutty, gritty, bully, bastard Yankees that I absolutely hate like poison. And I would put it out here right now. I don't know if he's out there. I'm sure he's out there, but he's not listening to the show. But Frank Russo, unapologetic Yankee fan, author of some Yankee books, by the way, guest last night on New York Baseball Digest. You know, I'll put it out there. If he's out there, Frankie, please call me. Please. Look at this. We have an update. Scoring update. That was a moonshot. Tadaya. Going deep, and it's 2-0 Twinkies. If the crowd goes wild, that was a moonshot. Oh, baby. Celebrate.
Guess what? I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbell.
That's right. Wow. Oh, it's a party now. Get your pork chop on a stick ready. I guess what I'll do here to Alaman left,
is I'll give you the lineups here in some ease. I still have them. So I'll go back and get them.
Like it. Loka, loka, loka.
Oh, man. Here we go. For your lineups, for your New York Yankees, we have at shortstop, Anto Jeter. In right field, Anto Swisher. At first base, Exo Tex Shara. At third base, Philo Rodriguez. Second base, Anto Cano. The DH, Eco Thames. The catcher, Anto Posada. And the center fielder, Philo Granderson. And the left fielder, Anto Gardner. So that is five Antos in the starting lineup. Two Philos, one Token Eco, one Token Exo. And on the mound, of course, Eco CC Sabathia. For your Twinkies, we have... In center field, we have Philo Spahn, who began the year by fouling a ball off, hitting his mother in spring training. The mercurial Met free agent that never actually lands on the Mets, Philo Orlando Hudson. He's got some O-Dog name, something like that. Once in a while, hits the ball. We have Mr. MLB The Show himself, Joe Exo Mauer. Nicely played, Mauer. In left field, Eco, Mr. Young, the aforementioned DH, the big Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, Philo Tomei, and the slugger, Kadaya, Anto Kadaya, and then Anto Cabell, if I say his name wrong, Cabell, I don't know. And Valencia, the third baseman, is a Philo, followed by J.J. Hardy, Anto at short. So for the Twinkies, you've got a pretty balanced lineup on the top half, four Philos and three Antos with, again, a Token Eco and a Token Exo. So this series is going to be played basically in the 80% range of somatic interactions. We have basically an Anto-Philo situation where the Yankees have five Antos, two, three for the Twinkies, and the Twinkies have four Philos for two for the Yanks. And really, that's it's sort of a top-heavy series in that way, in that the pitching matchups, you know, you can go lefty-righty, you can go all that stuff. But when I look at playoff lineups, I look at composition. And when you see a team like this, the Twins are so, I mean, they're managed by an Exo. Yankees are managed by an Anto. Girardi's an Anto, and Grant, sorry, my dentist name. What's his name? Gardenhire is an Exo. So you have a very kind of cold fish hand on both of these teams. Twins are much more gross motor, Philo-ish, prone to mistakes in big spots, where the Antos are self-sufficient on the Yankee side. But as I look up and down the lineup here, you know, I see more Antos at the bottom of the lineup in the Twins lineup, which is really cool because those individual at-bats, yeah, especially when you get past the fifth point in the lineup here, are going to be your RBI ones. And the Twins are notoriously good, in RBI situations. So we'll see how it plays out. Like I said, I kind of see it very tenuous for the Yankees this year. They have always been able to win ugly. That's one thing the Yankees did. The win they got against the Red Sox about a week and a half ago, to finally put them to sleep, when they weren't playing well, was a classic Yankee win. Classic. Mariano blows the save in the top of the ninth, and what do the Yankees do? They scratch, they claw, they fight, they get a walk, they get a pass ball. It's amazing. And then they get the key hit, they tie the game. Same thing happened in extra innings. It was a walk and then a bunt, and then the guy throws it into the guy's back. It's first and third. It makes you sick. And this is why I hate them. Hating them has nothing to do with the fact that they win. It's the fact that their fan base is so sensitive to losing. They can't handle it. Is the line driving the corner? Run, you bastard! He's safe! Sliding in with a double. Mr. Hardy. And another hit for Toronto. See, this is going to be cool because the classic Ekwonu face-off between CeCe, who is a dominant star, he's a 20-win star. Look at that bounce he got. Kind of a lousy throw. Can know how to dive across and good slide. Good fundamental slide. Whoop, nice hook slide. So, we got a runner in second here. And, I look at it like, you know, you see the composition of the lineup. The Yankees have Andres at the top of the order, and they have two out of three at the bottom of the order. You know, there's Andres everywhere. So you when you have Andres in the lineup, it's almost like they stick up like blades of grass. They're in there at bat. So it's very difficult to rattle a team that has a lot of Andres in the lineup, just like the Phillies, a lot of Andres in their lineup, you know, because they're not thinking about the surroundings. They're not thinking about their teammates. They're not thinking about the structure of the game. They're just hitting. And that creates a lot of, steely-eyed players when you have that many of them in the lineup. They become very mentally tough. And with the finalness of the Twinkies, it's a lot of contagious stuff. A little ground ball third. Ground ball second. Let me get out of the inning. Anyway, they're still peppering CeCe here. 2-0 Twinkies. When you look at these two teams mixed together, I just see the game being really decided on momentum switches and the fact that the top half of the Twins lineup is very philo, which means that it's a domino effect. If they're hot, they'll all be hot. If they're cold, they'll all be cold. They follow in order. They're very much philos flock together. You know that. So anyway, there's my little take on that. There's a couple other things to do. Boy, difficult day. A difficult, difficult day. So coming out of the Coco, a couple things I wanted to pass along. Out west, see if I can find that while I'm doing nothing. Out west we have a situation where the Health 2.0 community is meeting, as we currently speak, in San Francisco. And let's see if I can find the link here with all the fancy... I don't know why this thing just ate all my history. Wow. All right, be like that. My computer is, I think it really is possessed by the devil. Because it just never fails. Absolutely drive you nuts. I should get that Loca song back on. Loca, Loca. It stays in your head. All right, let's see. So right now they're meeting out there. They got a couple days. They've had a pre-conference for a couple days, the health camp, and basically, you know, we had a conference last weekend in Bridgeport. We had, you know, basically five speakers on Saturday, and then we had two speakers on Sunday, plus our videos and all the other contributions. We had a lot of people contribute. I think 20, 22 people altogether. To assemble some type of a cohesive way to present the resources that make up what is a discipline. It's a disciplinary sort of a message to these Health 2.0 guys about the subject of coherence. So I'm looking up and down the lineup here as they meet. The elite of Health 2.0 are meeting out in San Francisco this week at the Health 2.0 conference. And, you know, you've got all these guys here. Let me see if I can break down the speakers. I know they have a sheet here that has, like, all the stuff on all the speakers. I don't know if it works that way. Let's see. Yeah. So the keynote guys are bigwigs, okay? You got your Jeff Goldsmith from Health Futures, all right? And he's a big deal. The Ultimate Insider is what it says right here in his bio, from Health Futures Incorporated. And he's best known for telling his opinion and pointing out harsh truths. That's nice. I might be the same as him. But anyway, this guy is pretty much understands that the future of Health 2.0 is this very complex mix of technology and information. And, you know, that's why when I saw the stat this morning, caught me by surprise, that when you look at the web, I mean, you think of the web as mostly what? It's like Facebook and porn, right, pretty much? But this Pew Internet poll from the American Life Project revealed that 113 million Americans, all right, representing 80% of Internet users, search the Internet for healthcare information. Now, that's just shocking. They can't get it from the doctor, so they're going to the web, right? Now, look at this. So 58% said the information they found in their last search affected a decision about how to treat an illness or condition. 80% of the population is going to the web to find out stuff about health, and 60% are actually acting on the information they get up there. All right? I'm down here on the ground 20 years. I don't have that kind of a batting average. No one listens to me 58% of the time. Forget about it. 55%, even though I am a fake doctor, according to Frank, I have a real degree and real debt, if you'd like to know that. 55% say, I'd like my money back if it was fake. 55% say the information changed their overall approach to maintaining their health or the health of someone they take care of. So this information isn't just for, you know, achy, painy stuff. It's actually affecting lifestyle and ultimately behavior. Who just walked? Lead off walk. 54% say the information led to a doctor to asking a doctor new questions or getting a second opinion. Look at that. Look at that. So they're taking information from the web. They're acting on it almost to the point of almost two-thirds of the time they're acting on it. It's having an impact on their lifestyle, and they're questioning the authorities on the ground. Now, you'd think this would be a great opportunity if people are that receptive to get information that isn't about health and disease, health and disease, health and disease, that windshield wiper going back and forth, and back and forth, and to actually get some education across to people so that they understand they don't have to rely on this system for their well-being. So we had this conference. And when you see stats like that, you say to yourself, wow, how can we take advantage of this? Basically, you know, we went through the entire conference, and we had some pretty esteemed guests, and we have some other contributors in here. But I'll just give you the skinny on it because I really don't want to focus on that tonight so much. I might play a video later, you know, that from one of the speakers actually at the conference out west in San Francisco, Alexandra Drain, gave us a nice video about her company and Eliza and what they do. And I'll give you the, I'll give you now, it's her biography here because it's very revealing. Alexandra is a very revealing person. Let's see. Look-a-look-a-look-a. Well, where are you, Alexandra? Alexandra. So anyway, you got a lot of big-time, like, software guys and database guys, and there's just not a lot of people that, they're information managers. They're not really, to me, health. They're really just information guys that have health as their topic. And as I was pointed out to on Sunday by my brother-in-law, the esteemed Anthony Burke from VML, technology is agnostic. Da-da-da-da-da. All right, let's see. Okay, so Alexandra Drain, president of Eliza Corporation, promotes healthy discussions, I like that, using both its homegrown interactive voice response system and web strategies, acquired in its Health 2.0 marriage to Springly. Alex also founded Engage with Grace, which is this viral movement that encourages people to talk about the end-of-life care, which is a big issue because it's not something that's really in the parentheses of mainstream care at all, hence all the paranoia about the death panels. But today, this will be tomorrow, on the panel in San Francisco, she's going to share results of her new survey of unmentionables in healthcare and introduce a new nonprofit, ElizaLife.org, on the panel. So I guess like, what I'm saying is that the discussions have gotten more granular in Health 2.0, giving us more of an opportunity to infect that conversation with the discussion of coherence and the applications of it, but not on the clinical level. The more we go into this model where everything has to be about evidence-based medicine and clinical this, the people that judge that are biased. So there's no way to get to the point where they're going to approve of it. That's why I yell at the chiropractors all the time. You're playing a losing game when you try to prove yourself, prove subluxation, do more studies, get more research, blah, 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 blah. The public is getting information from the web and using it. So if you just give them good, reliable information, make yourself accountable, they will come back and get more information and use it again. And ultimately, they will drive the conversation. Health 2.0 is supposed to be a consumer-driven, expert-supported entity, a platform. And what I see it becoming more and more is a technology-driven, expert-filtered system. And that's just going to be basically what we have already. I mean, there's a lot of things that are going on the allopathic side. Telemedicine, you know, virtual medicine, where the surgeon is sitting on a he's sitting in a hammock in Hawaii, and he's doing an operation in Kansas City, you know, where you can consult with experts from a distance. I think, oh, that's great. Well, that's great. Freaking Jeter. Oh, he boots it in left field. All right, Yankees are coming back, first and second. This is why I hate them. They don't just go meekly. I want the two games this afternoon were both kind of like boring. The outcomes were decided by the third or fourth inning. And the Yankees won't do that. They will not go away. They just sit and, just makes you nuts. Anyway, back to Health 2.0 for a second. My original idea and my subsequent ideas coming out of the conference are shifting. My original idea was take all the puzzle pieces, get all the people that have been working on coherence in different fields from different angles. Some are working more in a qualitative way, some are working more in a qualitative way, some are working more on a metaphysical level, some are working more on a physical level, and put all the ideas together in a big mosaic to show that coherence is a complex thing. You know what? No one wants to know that. But the fact is, all coherence is, all it ever will be, as far as I'm concerned, is just simply this, communication without effort. When you click your mouse and things go back and forth, you know, from site to site, that network is coherent. When you have spyware and when you have situations like I have, it ain't. There's effort. Every time there's effort, there's a loss of coherence, a packet loss of coherence. And every time you retell a message and repackage, you ever play that telephone game, you know, it starts to distort it. So to get to the point where there's clear communication, you have to go through the confusion and weed it out. And that's all it's going to take. Ooh, I almost misplayed it in left field. All right, one away, first and second here. So anyway, I'll table that discussion for now. Just knowing those stats and what we did, and I'm working on a lot of stuff on the site. Maybe we'll talk about it next week. Maybe we'll have the Eliza people on next week after they get back from the conference. They'll be on the East Coast next week. And maybe we can have them on to give us their feedback. Because my impression of it was that the techies were much more interested in apps, much more interested in how we use this, practical, pragmatic, you know, more about applying the stuff rather than going through the hair-splitting, mind-numbing, absolute just tedium of really what is real science, what is normal science, which is to ferret out the truth and to be very precise and exact and you know, like we were reminded, science means to cut, means to scissor. And it takes forever. The science of coherence, the philosophy of coherence, and the art or the application of coherence are not three different things. They're three distinct aspects of one thing, which is the discipline of coherence. Three balloons, three strings, and one hand. So anyway, that's my beef on that. That's the way I look at it. And I guess I kind of take it as a sort of my own personal wish that I could make things that simple and available to people, because I see people complicate themselves trying to over-diagnose, over-assess, over-pathologize every symptom they have. And you go to WebMD, people become, you know, digital hypochondriacs overnight. And there's so many issues around Health 2.0 that don't get discussed. We brought them up on Sunday at the conference. 10 years ago, everything was Y2K. Now it's about HIPAA. Now it's about protecting health information. What if that stuff becomes part of your profile? What if people know about your health conditions? I say so freaking what? But everyone else is so defensive because that stuff gets used against you. Fact of the matter, it does. And when I see it happening to people that are trying to live a different lifestyle, trying to move towards a lifestyle that is more in rhythm with their biological nature rather than their social conditions, it saddens me because they're not doing it with the proper tools. They're doing it with rudimentary tools. It's like trying to get out of a bear trap with a toothpick. Ain't going to happen. So people struggle, and then they live in chronic conditions for half their lives when a lot of this stuff is reversible. We'll pop to right, and he's got it. Nobody's tagging, and it's two away. So the Yankees are frittering away this rally here. This is nice. So anyway, we might be joined in a minute or two, if you got the email, from one Mike Silva, who will help us somacast the game a little bit. And I'm going to try and stay more focused on as we go forward through October, because I'm launching a whole new Coherence Care initiative coming out of this conference, Coco Care. And you'll see it on the site probably by the end of the week. I'm really tired, guys. I got to admit, the conference took a kidney out of me. It was unbelievable. Because you're dealing with personalities that don't normally interact, ideas that don't normally brush up against other ideas that are different. And it was an experiment. But it was one of those experiments where the lab blows up because it was very combustible, and you had to sort of contain it. Hopefully we'll have the DVD out by early December. You guys can look at some of the streaming previews. We'll get work on that. Because I really think the future of this is to get all of this information out of the, you know, kind of linear health disease model that we're in, and talk about vitality, talk about functionality, talk about developmental growth, talk about things in terms of rhythms and change, things that don't fit into the static diagnostic model that you see in psychology and you see in mainstream care. It's just a point of fact. All right, we got A-Rod up here. This is going to be great. Oh, just in time. All right. So joining us from his estate on the island of Long, we have with us Mike Silva. See if I can find an appropriate introduction. A-Rod's up here. Let's turn A-Rod up.
They struck him out.
I think that's the perfect introduction. There he is. The baseball man of New York, Mike Silva.
And you were ahead of me because I'm on DirecTV, so I knew the result before it happened.
You pay for the privilege with that HD.
Yes, yes. I could pay for a couple of shekels for this grand estate that I'm sitting in right now.
That's right. By the way, if you have a bid for Mike, you
yes,
can contact
269-941. Well, no, let me not give that out.
Just to contact him through the site. He's available for bar mitzvahs and parties.
Right.
He'll even show the site to you on a weekend. I almost caught myself.
That would have been a little bit too much information on the air.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah, especially at the last night's show. You might have some hits out on us.
Yeah. Oh no. Today. I mean, I'm off to a roaring start. I was lectured about how the law of averages is not really a law, so I learned something today.
Maybe this is something that and I got into it with the. The numbers junkies in my world on Saturday who will absolutely split a hair over what is trivia to me, but what is life and death to them because it fits into their algorithm. If you're watching a baseball game, I understand if you're playing percentages, you know, do you bunt a runner over, do you play the tie at home and win on the road, those are axioms. People look at them as if they are chiseled in stone. And Moses came down the mountain with the Ten Commandments and the Sabermetrician's Guide. I mean,
I'll give you even one better. Now, Granderson was up, I believe it was the second inning with two runners on and two outs, and he had a hard ground ball to first, and, you know, he was out. And Joe Sheehan, who used to write for Baseball Prospectus and now has his own newsletter that he's charging people to read, big numbers guy, said, well, you know, based on, and there is a chart out there, believe it or not, which is called a win probability chart. And it'll give you every scenario in a baseball game with runners on in the inning,
wow.
And it'll tell you the leverage of the situation. And they'll color-code it with red for high leverage. It's like, this is a very high leverage situation. If I were Joe Girardi, I'd pinch in Austin Kearns in this situation. Now, basically, you just started the game. You have your center fielder in there. This guy wants to pinch in Austin Kearns because who knows? I mean, Kearns is probably better against left-handed pitching. That's more of a discussion before the game, whether you start Kearns and move Gardner to center. Not realizing that, okay, first of all, that's odd, number one. Number two, you've lost Granderson for the entire series if you did that. I mean, the psychological and emotional impact of doing something along those lines.
When you reduce people to numbers, you get back a number. I mean, so again, you lose the
Well, you can't, because you have to look. See, it's easy to sit here on Twitter and do that.
or play Stratomatic, you don't have to face those people. They're not real people. They're cards. They're stats.
Right. They're
These
just
are real
trending
people
data.
You have to face. Exactly. And if you, you know, if you look at it this way, now Granderson hasn't been good against lefties this year. He's been better this year than the prior year, or maybe some of the last couple of
right.
years. And I agree, he's pretty much Alex Cora offensively against lefties. But you still, I mean, the only thing he did wrong in that at bat is he hit it right.
You just made an arcane statistical reference that me and you got, but it's like it's Alex Cora. Okay.
They're not going to get that. They're not going to get
that. If anyone listens to
this
show.
And I'll tell you, I'll go down in history because I was, being, you know, a little narcissistic from time to time, I searched my name on Twitter to see if anyone's talking about me. And I found out after Frank Cora got his RBI double this afternoon for Texas,
yes.
somebody mentioned, cue Mike Silva, Frank Cora just got a double. I'll never hear the end of defending Frank Cora and saying he'd have a good year. Even though I did a mea culpa and admit that it was time to move on, but they only remember the wrong stuff. They don't remember the stuff that I that I'm right for. You know?
Well, I mean, this is like most of they say statistics are for losers because you're basically looking at things from, that are dead. You're never looking at something that's happening that's alive, and that's one of the reasons why in the somatic stuff I look at the lineup. I don't know if you heard before, but I'm looking at the lineup here. Yankees, of course, starting five Antos tonight. But the Twins were smart, and maybe just accidentally smart.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing for the Yankees?
Well, the numbers are weird because the Twins have four Philos in the lineup, and Philos do not play good in night games. Their reflexes get broken down in the second half of games. That's a whole other story. But the way they have the lineup early in the game, they've got these Antos in the bottom of the lineup. They've got Antos hitting 6, 7, and 9 in the bottom of the lineup, and they've got the Philos basically hitting 1 through 5. Leading off second slot and fifth slot. So that's why early in the game, good. Late in the game, not so good. So you're going to rely on the RBI situations that are going to come up. It's going to be the bottom of the lineup that's going to be up in those situations, and that's where the Antos are. And I think it's one of their master strategies, they say here, is that the Twins are a team that basically scores in bunches. I've watched a ton of these games with the Twins where they'll have rallies late in games that'll go on forever. They'll score 6-7 runs in an inning sometimes, late in games, because the bottom of the lineup is very, very top-heavy Anto. Even though they don't
and I think
Anto's
you saw that when they were at Citi Field. They bunched runs together like 5 or 6, and it was a team. And I'll be honest with you, and I said this on the show last night and in the piece this morning, on paper, I really don't see how they can win this series. I mean, they don't have Justin Morneau. I'm not impressed with the back half of the starting rotation. Although they have three closers out there, you know, we talked about Fuentes last year. I think he'll be better in a setup role. And the what Keith Hernandez used to call the Wookiee, John Roush, I think they'll be better in a setup role.
Wookie.
But they're not exactly, when they were closers, they're not exactly lights-out guys, but they're very good pitchers. And then you got the kid Matt Capps from Pittsburgh that's never he's never closed in the playoffs before, but he's put up a big year. On paper, you know, and even in the lineup, I'm like, how are they going to navigate the Yankees with this powerful offense? But they have home field. You know, I talk about the law of averages and maybe it's time the Twins turn around. And most important, I just don't believe in this Yankees team. The core four is the weakest, in my opinion, that it's ever been in the last 15 years. They haven't played well the last third of the season. The starting pitching outside of Sabathia is extremely shaky. It's hard for me to see how they could win. And if they do navigate this series, what's the odds they beat a Texas team with Cliff Lee or Tampa, who's playing with that, you know, major league type chip on their shoulder because they're going to get broken up at the end of the year? I don't know. And if they do, you know, do you think they're going to beat the Phillies and Roy Halladay now? I mean, geez.
Well, I mean, that's the point. This is that. Sort of sensitivity I was tapping into last night with Frank a little bit is that
well, you hit a nerve. Look at that.
Oh, my God.
Nerve.
I don't know if he ever came down.
That's the first time. He did. He actually called me to apologize. I said, well, I'm not the guy to apologize. I said, first of all, it's good radio, I said, and it was all in good fun. I mean, it's again, it's baseball. I mean, we're not talking
about that's the
about
point. I was trying to say that to him on the air, and I think he was talking about Red Sox fans that work at ESPN that celebrate when a Yankee fan dies in a car crash. I'm like, dude, I'm just looking for 3 out of 5 here. My team is singing Billy Joel songs, you know, about their general manager right now. So come on.
Let's get it back down to Roosevelt Avenue, okay? I mean, I'm far, far from the baseball fire at this point. I'm in the cold wilderness.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, that's the funny part about being a Met fan. I added it up this morning. I put it on Facebook. I'm 10-7 in my postseason Yankee hate in my lifetime. 17 playoffs.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well,
that's pretty good.
10 years, the Yankees didn't win the World Series when they went in the playoffs.
Wow.
You know, but the thing is, I was on a streak. Up until last year, I'd won the last 7 times, and my Yankee hate had come through.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there were great highlights. Think of it. You know, losing to Arizona, that was glorious. Glorious to the way they lost that. You had to suffer. You had to suffer through that Kim guy giving up those home runs. But it paid off with Schilling and the whole thing.
I remember those home runs. I remember where I was for both those home runs, and I remember the shock. And I even interviewed Scott Brosius back in 07, which was a few years after it happened. And he even said how surreal it was for him hitting that home run. And I don't think I've ever seen since, or maybe there never was a team before, that could take the punches in the stomach that Arizona team took over three days in New York, come back home, blow the Yankees out in Game 6, and not only do that, beat Mariano in the ninth inning after getting totally dominated in the eighth inning. I think that's one of the ultimate pick-yourself-off-the-mat type of wins, maybe in the history of baseball. I mean, just think about how, if that was the Mets, how demoralizing.
Oh, the Mets.
Those
the Mets can't handle
it
when the Nationals rally on them. Come on.
They're
busy losing games with Ollie P walking 3 guys in the 14th inning.
Right.
No, there's moments in a baseball season. That Arizona team was sort of a once-in-a-lifetime team. I mean, they had Gonzo. They had a lot of, like, old steroid guys. And plus, they had Schilling, and they had Randy Johnson. They just had a lot of guys that weren't afraid of the Yankees. You know, Schilling was never afraid of the Yankees.
Yeah, no, I mean, really.
They weren't afraid of him.
Schilling,
everyone
Johnson,
gets intimidated by him. The Braves got intimidated by them at a 2 World Series. They basically melted.
And that was the interesting thing about the Braves, that they were totally the opposite against the Mets. It's almost like, you
it
know,
was a classic
the Yankees,
bully.
They were so intimidated by the Yankees that they were held back with the Yankees, that they basically were going to make sure, well, there's no way we're going to have the second New York team beat us. And they went out of their way to kind of...
Look at this. Give me run. Hello.
And there's another run on that one.
Wild
look at
pitch.
That. It's 3-0 Minnesota. This series, by the way, off topic a little bit, but this series, and I said this, has a little bit of that 07 Cleveland feel to me. You know, Cleveland
the midges.
At that time...
That was another great moment. The midges
was
great.
The midges,
I couldn't stop laughing. I actually hiccuped a piece of pizza out of my mouth that night.
Speaking of which, and I know I'm jumping around over here, I mean, really really worth holding on to Jabba Chamberlain and a Roy Halladay deal.
I was just going to say that. I saw your tweet about that this morning.
Well,
I actually
wrote a column about that, and now I'm getting a lot of... I mean, and look,
of course.
Let's be fair. I'm not criticizing Brian Cashman, because I really don't think Anthopoulos and the Blue Jays wanted Halladay to go to the Yankees. Mm-hmm. And it sounded like since spring training that Halladay really just wanted to go to... the Phillies, because I think they train in Clearwater, and he was comfortable with the city.
Yeah, he's very exo about it. He wasn't really, like, doing it to play games.
I don't know if he's necessarily interested in New York, the Yankees or the Mets. And if he did come here, he would have only been here a year. And I don't know if that would have...
You know, that brings me around to Cliff Lee, because everyone has it fait accompli. He's going to the Yanks at the end of the year because of his relationship and all the near trade with, you know, in Seattle and everything else. Given the, I'll call it the apocalypse now, that the apology now that we saw on Monday, and the fact that they're, you know, they had to go and kiss David Wright's patootie after they, oh, we'll trade David Wright if we get him the right offer. Are the Mets, in their dysfunctional haze, are they capable, salary-wise, of taking on a guy like that and competing with the Yankees for
him? Because, I mean, I told you this off the air. I mean, I look at the Wilpons, and although they did, on the surface, a nice job with the press conference, I don't know how – I'm not saying they're lying, because that's strong words. But when they say things, well, we've never said no to a GM, we never had a budget, it's kind of a fine line. And I keep going back, and I know that, you know, I've spoken to Howard, my little co-host there on my show.
Mm-hmm.
Has
he been called yet for an interview, by the way?
But he's giving people permission to call him. So
he's gotten permission.
He sent an email out letting everyone know that the Mets have permission to call him. That's okay, you know, even though that the Marlins won't grant the Mets permission to talk to their guys, he is granting himself permission to talk to the Mets. So
that's
classic. You know what? I need to use that line on my boss. I'm going to tell my boss, I am giving you permission to give me a raise when I see him tomorrow at my, at my day job. But, you know, Steve Phillips talked about how when Gary Sheffield was available in the late 90s, how the Mets were like, well, the attitude, the money, yada, yada, yada. They're like, well, yeah, you can go after him, but here's the guys you could offer. Dennis Cook, Rich Rodriguez, basically, you know, players that would never get a deal done. And ultimately it didn't. So in the vainest sense over there, yeah, they didn't deny Phillips, but did they give him the support he needed to get the deal done? No. The point being is, could they be in Cliff Lee? Well, calling up and saying, hey, we're interested in you, Cliff, but we'll offer you 3 years, $60 million, when the rest of the playing field, including the Yankees, are offering 5 or 6 years, you know, it's really not necessarily the true interest in the strictest sense.
Well, that's what they do all the time. The Mets feign interest in almost anything.
Except for 2004-05, when they went after Pedro and Beltran and Wagner.
Well,
and
but that was the last time they were doing the manager, general manager reboot.
Yes, and maybe they'll do that now. Now, I don't, and I think Cliff, and I think the reason they won't go after Cliff Lee, because I think Lee is going to want a 5-year deal. I think the Mets are deathly afraid of the back half of that deal. They see what happened with Perez and
ooh,
Castillo.
Yes.
I would
compare Cliff Lee with those two.
No, but you know what? Pitcher at his age, 32, you know, they see Santana, what's happened. You know, they can't be stuck in 3 years with two $20 million sunk costs. They cannot be stuck with $40 million of payroll in Lee and Santana that, you know, quite simply are just basically wall ornaments over there.
Yeah.
If they are going to make a big splash, the guy that they very well may make the splash on is the Japanese kid, Yu Darvish, who is, you know, going to have a $25 million posting fee and probably, you know, a contract, I would think, in the 3-4 year range. Now, I was listening to, well, not listening, I was reading with C.J. Nitkowski, who, former St. John's product, pitched here in the big leagues, over in Japan, has seen the kid pitch, says the kid's the real deal. I mean, not only is the real deal on the mound, he's kind of a playboy off of it, where he announced in front of a crowd after a game that he had gotten a woman pregnant in Japan out of wedlock. And,
nice.
And in order to not dishonor his family, he's agreed to marry her. I mean, that's the kind of thing. Could you imagine him announcing that on SNY after?
There you go.
But the point being is he's concerned with Darvish is that he's a young kid. He's in his early 20s, and he's got a thin frame. And, you know, can he hold up? Can he pitch? Because remember, Japan, they only pitch, I think, once or twice a week. You know, they even ask him sometimes to pitch a little more than that. So, and you saw with Daisuke and all that stuff. But
yeah,
I think if there's anything, that's the kind of the name they'll go after, that kind of pitcher, and then complement, you know, the rest of it. I mean, they have $130 million of the payroll already on the books for next year.
Yeah, I get a little skittish when the Mets with Japanese players. It always seems like we get the ones that are defective. We get the ones that
well, I don't think
we don't get Matsui. We get the other Matsui. You know, it's like
yeah,
you know.
They've been a little bit bad. I think Takahashi this year.
Yeah, they're
nice
functional. Those guys are serviceable. We've upgraded a little bit.
I mean,
so
they're
about Logan White for a minute, this Dodger guy that you posted about. I read about him a little bit too, because I'm much more interested in the. You know, the free agency thing to me is always a pick and a pull because you never know what the Wilpons are willing to spend. But it comes down to if you're going to go GM first and then manager, are the Wilpons so interested in sort of passing the buck and putting the GM basically in the driver's seat, the full autonomy you know move, that they'd hire a guy outside the organization like this Logan White guy who is a scout maven guy. And basically, you know, try to farm raise a team like you did really in the 80s. There were a couple of the trades peppered in. This guy seems to be someone on the horizon that isn't an old school guy, isn't a Sandy Alston or some of the other guys that have been mentioned that would come in and sort of, you know, be impresario, Frank Cashin-esque type GMs.
Well, the one thing we learned from that press conference, Fred and Jeff do not know how to build a baseball team.
Yeah, but what if they just didn't? See, I like the fact that they're sad. And they're okay. It's great. Good. We're all sad. What are you going to do? And their statement is, well, the GM. So they're going to sit back now and make paper airplanes and listen to someone comes in and lights up the room like the last time with Art Al. Why don't they put a vision out there?
Well, we want to win the division next year.
I don't think they know where to go with this team, and that's
what is it
where
now,
this
team?
Interview this is where the interview process comes into play. Now, Logan White, and again, just because he's a good scout and he's able to do all these nice things that you were reading about what I put up there about the Dodgers.
Yeah.
You know, can he be a general manager? I mean, I don't know. General manager means running an organization.
Well, that's
big
the Omar thing. Omar had to be the principal, too.
Yeah, I don't know if Omar ever really – I mean, Omar was a scout, but I don't know if Omar ever had the kind of resume you saw me put up there with Logan White.
No,
I mean,
this guy had drafts out of his mind. He was, and he
yeah.
understood – and he also had a little bit of a Sabre thing going on with – you build 30 major league players, and then you're a World Series contender.
Yeah,
track
but it was
draft.
More about using historical trends and – and
right.
the draft. And I mean, Omar was – Phillips always called Omar his ideas guy. He was the out-of-the-box guy. And I think you look at that, and he's miscast. Now, a guy like White, if he comes in and he brings these great skills, is he going to have the autonomy to have a functional chain of command? Is he going to have the support from ownership to have the ability to hire good baseball people around him? Brian Cashman's not a genius. Brian Cashman has good people around him. They get together.
That's Michael in the closet.
They put a plan together. They stick to the plan, and they work together, and they get virtually no interference from above. And I think that.
Well, now that George is a plaque on the wall instead of
but
mucking
he wasn't
up my
interfering.
TV screen.
I mean, after 2005,
well,
he wasn't interfering. But over
30 years, he interfered 20. Yeah.
After 2001, when George said, okay, now we're going to do it my way and sign Giambi and Randy Johnson.
Right.
And
that was his last act to me, was the Giambi signing. That was George pulling his 80s move. And you got, Costanza's father going, you know, Ken Phelps? It's like,
well, it's fine when you sign Jason Giambi in prime and he puts up those numbers to take the steroids out of it. But when you start taking that mentality and you're like, well, the best player on the market every offseason has to be a Yankee. Well, if that best player is Carl Pavano, or that best player – I shouldn't say Pavano because he was a desirable commodity after that year.
He was the
best second baseman. We need a second baseman. And the best second baseman on the free agent market is Tony Womack. We need to go out there and sign the best second baseman when you have a kid named Robinson Cano that was a year away. I mean, that's where George's principles went out the window. And I think, you know, a guy like Logan White will be able to take a Met payroll that apparently they've shown willingness to go up to $140 million in the past.
Mm-hmm.
If you're able to have, let's say, 23 homegrown players on a 40-man roster and sprinkle them in and have, instead of paying Fernando Tatis $2 million,
you have
Nick Evans for $500,000 do what he did and that much better. Lucas Duda do, a fourth outfielder or a swingman instead of going out and have to pay Jeremy Reed $2 million or get Ruben Tejada to do what Alex Cora did for 2-year contract.
Right.
So that's where I think these guys and where the farm system comes to play, because then the Mets can go out and offer Mark Teixeira a 7-year deal or Cliff Lee a 5-year deal and say, you know what, yeah, if that deal doesn't look so good year 4 and 5, it's not going to cripple us. It's not crippling our payroll. Because the Mets spend so much on, I guess, I'm not going to say non-essentials, but peripheral stuff, that they now have to skimp at the top half of the roster because they could only do A or B. They can't do A, B, C, and D. So I think that's where a guy like Logan White will come to play. But, you know, the funny part is I look at all these guys, and each of them has a resume, and MLB puts all this nice stuff out there about them. Do we really know how these guys are going to do in this environment? It's so hard to judge an executive. It's not like a player or a manager who has a W and an L next to their name. You have to envision how these guys will fit into the culture. And honestly, do we know what the culture is going to be with the Mets and the Wilpons? I don't know.
Well,
I really don't know.
You know, as you know, I offered the hoist the collar solution on your site. And that, I guess, is what, among other things, got Mr. Russo upset with me. And,
yes.
I'm
the Yankees. That's why.
I don't even know. I have to go back and read what I wrote. That I said I called them the evil empire, which is most Yankee fans take that in stride. They know that they're evil empire. What was that? Was a bad thing to say? I don't understand. I
think it was more. You know, he just. You know, look. I think you sense, and I see it even on Twitter now as we speak. There is a lot of nervousness by these Yankees fans. Like as soon as the Twins went up 2-0, you know, there was a bunch of tweets from Yankees fans saying, well, last year they were down 2-0 in game 1, you know. These are the same guys.
They can't stand losing.
these are the same guys, you know, they'll yell at me for bringing up the law of averages, but then they'll be the same guys and say, well, you know, they were down 2-0. I mean, you know, any
That's why Francesa hung up on somebody. But first he went on his usual, you know, I think he's going to walk through this first round. This is a joke. And then he goes, what, if the Yankees lose tonight, they can't win the series? It's like they don't understand competition unless it's about them dominating somebody. That's why watching that 30-for-30 last night, I don't know who was the visionary that thought we're going to get behind-the-scenes footage of the Red Sox. You know, and they had all access. I mean, they're in the locker room, they're in the bus. I couldn't believe the you know,
the stuff that
sort
was
of behind the curtain stuff
in,
you got
yeah.
to see about that those four games. It's amazing.
Right. Yeah,
who
Kevin Millar.
Coming?
Yeah, Kevin Millar. I'll always remember. You know, I'll always remember.
Yeah.
It was a Saturday night. It was my my engagement party, 2004. And I was a huge Yankee fan. And when I heard the score, I'm like, holy, 19-7. And I said, you know, this sucker's over. And I was living out of a hotel. And, you know, at that time, not really any Wi-Fi, you know, living out of the Hampton Inn, you know, waiting to close on my house, kind of getting a little antsy. It was like month number four living out of a suitcase, which kind of gets a little... And, you know, I watch, you know, game four, and they come back with Mariano, and they win. And then they almost, I believe it was game five, where, if I'm not mistaken, it was Tony Clark hit a double down the line in extra innings. And if it didn't go in the stands, the Yankees would have taken the lead, and they probably would have won in five.
Yeah,
it bounced
twice and went in the stands by the pesky pole,
yes.
And that would have been it. And they would have won in five easy.
And they, exactly. And they didn't. And the Red Sox went five, and that's when, you know, you go home game six and chilling the bloody sock. And at that point, you know, after game six, you got to start to believe, you know, game seven.
I mean, there were so many twists and turns. But
and then
that,
you have the grand quote with Francesa, not on Mickey's birthday. I mean, come on. How much better could it get?
They're desperate when they start quoting dead Yankee birthdays.
Right.
And the thing with the best part about that those couple of games was – coupled on the lucky bounce, which the Red Sox never got, which is on that play they did.
Right.
Then the next game, you have A-Rod with the little Mickey Mouse slap at first base on Arroyo.
Yeah. Right.
And when in holy hell have the Yankees ever gotten a call reversed at Yankee Stadium in a playoff game with the Red Sox out there? And
I know. You knew that the karma was
Jeter. They called Jeter back and made him go back to first base.
Yeah,
and
the fans were crazy.
A-Rod's had his hands on his head at second.
Right.
I almost passed out because I was on the phone with my dad, and I just kept screaming, "There is no God, there is no God," because it was blatantly obvious what he did. And then it happened, and he goes, my dad, who's been rooting against him since Brooklyn Dodger days, he goes,
right,
maybe there is.
that's 04. They played the Cardinals. I said 03 was the, you know, you were rooting for the old loser World Series, which is the Cubs versus the Red Sox, you know.
Right.
04,
yeah.
It was, you know, Francesa's whole thing was, oh, you know, it's about time the Yankees take on the Cardinals, the best of the National League with the history,
right.
And, you know, versus the best of the American. It's always about, you know, it's always about adding to their fabric of their history. You know, it's not about
the opponent.
They
say it, though, Mike. They say it.
You know?
Baseball history is Yankee history.
Yes.
This is exactly. Their attitude. That's why when Frank gets on, I got to play the clip. I isolated the clip of me on the show last night. That's when Frank gets on and starts bashing ESPN and doesn't let me get a word in, because all I was trying to say was, and I'll say it here now because he can't interrupt me unless he wants to call, and Frank, you're welcome to call.
He's not going to call, I can tell you that. I think he's sleeping. He's very tired today.
He's not watching the game?
He's watching the game. He is. Definitely will not call when he's on the game. He kind of told me that he's a little stressed out about a post game show. I said no problems, you know. So it'll just be me and my buddy Neil Keefe from WFAN doing the post game tonight, which I have scheduled for midnight. And I got to be honest with you, I'm a little pessimistic that midnight is going to be it's already 10 o'clock, we're in the fourth inning.
Believe me, this game's not over. They're going to go back
and
forth.
Good God, I got to tell you, you got to love.
I'll be in the chat room on my third soda sitting here.
Well, you'll probably be the only one in the chat room at that.
Well, believe me, unless anyone from the Health 2.0 conference in San Francisco wants to jump in with me, because I'll be on chatting with them as well. But the thing was, I was trying to get across to Frank is that in his Yankee universe, which is another like little, you know, much. It's Red Sox Nation, but it's a Yankee universe. His perception, his sensitivity. Does he now remember the the rose petals that were thrown at A-Rod's feet the last couple of years at ESPN? I mean, and the fact that, you know, Jeter is basically akin to the god? I mean, there's just a... ESPN is just like my
said.
They're agnostic.
Yeah, I think the ESPN bias to the Red Sox, which I agree with them to a certain extent.
Yeah,
I
agree with that.
Think,
that
I think Gammons,
in principle.
I think
yeah.
Gammons was a lot of that.
That's what I'm saying. If you have Gammons on ESPN, he's a lifetime Red Sox fan. I understand
right.
that. But it wasn't as if they had – it's like the Yankees did well. And if you watch
right.
the clips on that 30 for 30, they were dismissing the Red Sox. They weren't like saying the Red Sox were competitive. They were really ripping them. They were mad Red Sox fans is what they were. And so
yeah.
the thing is that when he
I mean, the writers, was it Shaughnessy who's made a lot
Shaughnessy
of
Shaughnessy got in trouble, called him a bunch of frauds.
Yeah, bunch of frauds. I mean, Shaughnessy, I think he had a little tit-for-tat with A-Rod this week. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'll tell you a Dan Shaughnessy story. I always remember Dan Shaughnessy because I was waiting to do my show in the summer of 08 at WGBB, and the guy before me, the show before me, was interviewing Shaughnessy. And I still remember when, you know, he was giving his take on the American League East, the American League, and they said, hey, you know, before we let you go, could you tell us a little bit about what your thoughts on the National League? And right away, as soon as they brought up the National League, you know, I think Shaughnessy was like, there's another league? There's another, you know, I don't, like you could tell, like, he was confused by, what's this National League? And the Mets were in first place that night. When they asked him about the NL East, he says, well, the NL East will probably come down to the Phillies or the Marlins. And I said to, you know, and he goes, there's really nobody else right now you could see that could compete in the NL East, other than the Phillies and the Marlins. And I'm like, hey, Dan, did you know that the Mets are not six games under 500 anymore? They've gone on like a 15-2 run. They're in first place, you know. But that's
right,
Boston
right, right.
for
but,
you. That's Boston
but that,
for
but
you.
But that,
you know?
that myopia is what I was trying to question with Frank. It's like, I know he doesn't like the Mets, or maybe he actually hates the Mets, which Yankee hate for the Mets is really kind of redundant.
He doesn't.
What are you
no,
doing?
He doesn't. He's actually pretty fair. He kind of, you know, as long as the Mets don't get in his universe, he could care less what they do.
Yeah, I guess so. They just kind of ignore us because we're, you know, the Boston.
He doesn't like the Phillies, I know that, but the Mets, he just
didn't. What do the Phillies do to him?
Well, he's down in Jersey. He knows a lot of Philly fans
oh,
in
right.
Jersey.
He's got a friction thing
it's,
going on.
You know, I mean, look, anytime, I mean, look at Howard. He grew up in South Jersey in Cherry Hill. I mean, geez, you're around these people. It's, you kind of learn why you don't like Philadelphia when you spend a lot of time, I guess.
Believe me, I have no love for Philly, and I actually kicked several inanimate objects during the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning of that game yelling at the Invisible Wilcon.
Which was a great, I got to tell you, though.
He's amazing.
I only watched it from the 6th inning on. I mean, they didn't get a good swing all night. It doesn't sound like anything before. There wasn't a single ball that you said, wow, that was a game saver. Wow, that was a game saver. It didn't, I mean, he just picked them apart. And what a boost for the Phillies. I mean, I know it's one game, but think about how good they're feeling about themselves now going into the locker room.
You know what? Their well-being is not my concern, but I can understand why they feel like they got basically this series in their hip pocket. Unless the Reds basically show up in the other games that he's
I mean, look
pitching.
At the offense on these other teams, though. I mean, the Reds are the best offensive team in the National League.
They're
yeah,
free swingers. I mean, they're swinging they're a ball 3 feet outside the zone.
You know, they scored 790 runs. I understand the Great American Ballpark has something to do with that, but they
yeah.
get past this series, which they will. You know, San Francisco can't hit their way out of paper bag.
No, there's no more offense.
I just don't think the Braves are as good as their record indicated. I still thought the Braves were, you know, an 85-win team that, you know, played a little over the heads or maybe even less. You know, this could be a cakewalk into the World Series. It could really be a cakewalk. You know?
If they play this well and they get this kind of pitching, who beats them? I mean, really. I mean,
I don't think the Yankees do. I don't think the American League team does. And that would put, like, the second title in 3 years, four straight division titles. You know, and you get, you know, yeah, they, you know, I don't know how much. I mean, look, it might be in a. It might be a Yankee type of run. You might be seeing another
That's
two,
what
three
I'm
years.
Saying. The difference is the Phillies are always about, like, somebody did them wrong. They don't have this kind of, like, they still have that kind of, like, I'm gonna beat you up because I've been you know, beat down for all these years. It's almost, I don't know what the Mets would be like. I remember we were very, very hard to deal with in the 80s. But it's like when the team gets a wave like that, the Yankees assume it. Other teams, their personalities come out when they go on a little run like this. And that's why what I was trying to get across to Frank was is that the SNY announcers are very critical of the Mets.
I mean, to the point of being almost like they scratched their eyes out, where you can flip on yes at any time. The Yankees could you know, cause bubonic plague. They'd be like, well, that's baseball. But there's just, I mean, to say Michael Kay is objective compared to who? Sterling? I mean, they're all watching with the feety pajamas, and they're not allowed to talk about the Yankees. Almost like the old MSG, you know, when they got rid of Marv, you can't say anything bad about the Knicks. There's an internal sensitivity to anything critical about the Yankees. And it doesn't matter if you're talking about Jabba or all the things that went on this year, you know, with, what's his name, A.J. punching the thing. I mean, it's and forget about when George died and Jeter missing the funeral. Oh, my God, you can't question the captain. I forgot?
Yeah.
You know, there's a Teflonness to them. There's an impersonal aspect to them. There's this sort of like, don't you dare question me. Don't pay attention to the wizard behind the curtain. Pisses me off. And that's why I was trying to say to Frank, forget ESPN. It was a red herring. The point was is that as they go into the playoffs, there's this double entendre where we assume we're going to win. I'll put a disclaimer out if we lose, just like Francesa does. You know, we should sweep the series, but if we lose tonight, we're still going to win. And you just backed it up with that. We're down 2-0. We were down 2-0 last year. They can't handle losing. And the Met fan, of course, like I was saying on the piece there, it's that, you know, Jake LaMotta. You never got me down, Ray. That we just take punch after punch after punch after kick after whip, and we're just supposed to absorb punishment and build character as the Will Punch.
Maybe you should get Jen Sterger's take on this whole thing.
Yeah, well, of course, you know. Yeah, that brainiac. Yeah. We'll get her read on anything.
I didn't tell you she has shingles. Did you know that?
Did she tweet that?
No, she was actually, I went into her video chat yesterday to see what was going on, and she had to go to the doctor. She has shingles.
Wow.
Can't make it up, right? Yeah.
Well, that's just herpes zoster. That means that she didn't have chicken pox.
Exactly. She had chicken pox with your kids, so we got to see. She sat there, basically reads the computer and answers your questions on video. You know,
tremendous. Is she fully clothed, or is she?
Yeah, she's fully clothed. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for my interview about the Rays. Looks like it might not happen.
Yeah, keep waiting.
The Rays might be out by the weekend, and I think Jen's on to FSU football. So
I'll tell you, we'll put that out now. You'll get that interview when I get my Frank Russo interview.
Let's see what happens first. Don't doubt. It took me a couple of years. I got John Olerud. I mean, I could get Jen Sterger, you know, like.
No, well.
I think you bell
the first cat. You know, the second cat might run wild.
I'll probably get a call from a female, but it's probably not going to be Jen Sterger.
Let's put it that way.
It'll be someone far more interesting than Jen Sterger. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, okay. Okay. All right, now, for the benefit of people that didn't check out Mike's show last night, here is my little tit-for-tat with Frank. We'll take a listen to that and then come back and analyze his psyche.
We have a call, 914 from Westchester. 914-833, you're on with Frank and Mike.
How you doing there?
Hey, what's up?
Well, I'm sitting here watching a silent movie here on ESPN here as reliving those 4 days in October, which might be...
Oh, ESPN 30 for 30.
That's right. Just watch the Bloody Sock, just watch the interviews afterwards, and now I get to watch that glorious Game 7 when I was racing home and walked in right to see Johnny Demonic put one in the upper deck there at the old Yankee Stadium. And then the best part was 2.5 hours of watching Yankee fans wither and die, a thousand deaths. And... I'm thinking it's about time that happens again.
Frank, I mean, isn't it odd that 30 for 30 comes on? I mean, it's always odd timing that they put this out now. You know what I'm saying?
Nothing surprises me coming from ESPN. You know, they've been sucking up the Red Sox Nation for how many years now, please? So, I mean, anything ESPN, I hope people work for ESPN. And let me tell you, the majority of people over there, and I can tell you for a fact because I know people who work at ESPN, the majority of the people who work there cannot stomach the Yankees, so anything that, you know, if you're expecting fair and balance from ESPN, come on. It might as well be, instead of ESPN, it might as well be Red Sox Nation, okay, instead of the ESPN. So, I mean, anything they do.
NSPN,
I just,
and ESPN combined.
Grain of salt.
Hmm. Well, you know, I don't think if you looked at the YES Network for objectivity, you'd find much of it either, or Nesson for that matter. But the point is that
but you're missing
the Yankees
point here.
The Yankees are hateable.
No.
ESPN being a national network.
No, I'm not going to let you get away with this. The YES Network is the Yankee Network.
Okay? I understand, but they're
SNY about... SNY is the Mets Network. ESPN is supposed to be a sports network, not anti one particular team. So
and
you
your evidence is a 30 for 30 special?
You can't make the analogy with that. Sorry, not going to let you get away with that. If you can't make the analogy. You can't make the analogy.
I'm not going to sit here and defend what ESPN does. I think they're definitely... But look at them. They're a New England-based... company. They've had basically, you know, a lot of Red Sox announcers, on their board for years. But this idea that there's Yankee hate going on,
Do you want me to go over a list of people? Now, we're supposed to be discussing the playoffs. But
I know Joe Morgan. You have a Joe Morgan complex.
Sir, we can go down this road. But if you want me to name you a list of people who work for that station... Okay,
right.
Who work for that network who can't stomach the Yankees? I can give you a list of people who are object Yankee haters. Okay, they'll do a dance of joy, go outside and dance when a Yankee player dies in an auto accident. That's how bad some of these scumbags are. And if you don't believe it, I know who these people are. I listen. I'm friends with people throughout baseball, throughout media, and they told me some of these people work for ESPN and other networks. Complete. Scumbags, okay?
Wow,
I hate to be using language like that, but they are, okay?
Is it across the board? Do they pump the Celtics up and kiss the Patriots' butt?
They kiss the Patriots' butt over there at ESPN. Come on. They have
I don't know.
They
I watch.
They love Brett Favre.
There you go.
They love Brett Favre.
I think it's pretty tried and true. And this goes for Mets fans, too. You know, if the Mets are good, there's a lot of Met hate out there. It just doesn't happen to come from ESPN. But talking about the playoffs here, I just think that Yankee, I don't want to call it paranoia. You guys never get paranoid. But it's this, like, almost a disclaimer, like at the bottom of the screen, that says, well, maybe the Twins will beat us. And then you listen to a Francesa who just says, blatantly this afternoon, if you look at the roster, the Yankees are superior. They're much better. And number by number, but the Twins play a good fundamental ball, and it's almost like you're going to let us play a five-game series? You're going to actually let us play? The Twins get to play?
Time out. Why would you even listen to what Francesa says?
Oh, he's a big Yankee fan. I thought you would like someone on your side that colors it the other way. Nobody plays it down the middle.
Well, if I want to listen to somebody who's fair and balanced with the Yankees, I listen to Michael Kay, because Michael Kay is the only person who will say on his radio show if the Yankees are good enough or bad enough, okay? And he did that in 2008. He said, I don't think the Yankees have what it takes to get to the playoffs this year. In 2007, he said, I don't know if they're good enough to go all the way. All right? Last year, he thought that the Yankees were good enough to go all the way. This year, he's a little hesitant because there's some real question marks, like not having a second lefty in the bullpen, like not having enough depth at starting pitcher. There's a lot of questions with starting pitcher, pitching over there. And you know what? You don't have Johnny Damon and you don't have Hideki Matsui, and that's a big thing. And you know what? There are a lot of question marks with the Yankees. And you know, Michael Kay is fair. Mike Francesa makes statements all the time, sir, okay? All the time, Mike Francesa makes statements which are unfounded, and also Mike Francesa makes statements that are not backed up by any kind of content or any kind of fact. He's done that before.
That's kind of
WFAN MO. I forgot about.
Well, then he's perfect for YES Network, right?
No, he's not perfect for the YES Network. He just said
the YES Network is a Yankee bias station, and then you put a Francesa on there who could just bore the eight for 5 hours and give his... Kay might as well wear his feet pajamas when he's saying the game.
Why don't you attack SNY?
Because they are objective, and the Mets actually...
Objective. Come on,
they are.
Gary Cohen and Keith Hernandez. They went last year when they went into Yankee Stadium. When they went into the Yankee Stadium, they were bashing the stadium. Oh, it's not good. It's not that. They were making fun of the sightlines. Please look.
They criticized your stadium.
Mike, I really don't want to have this conversation anymore.
I'm objective about the Mets. That's all I'm concerned about.
Mike, can we talk about the playoffs?
All right, Frank, enough of you. Jesus Christ.
I it was one of those situations where I kind of lost control. I've lost control of the show twice. That was one time, and the other time was a couple of years earlier.
Like you said, it's good radio, I guess. I mean, it was just
I think
hilarious.
It was good radio. But it gave you a perspective on, you know, how certain Yankee fans, they don't take criticism well. Look, just go to the site, do a little sociology study. Anytime, I think I've been, and I'm not just saying this, I've been very fair to the Yankees on that site throughout the history of that site. They know I'm a Mets fan. I praise them when they deserve to be praised. Do I take the tact of, hey, guys, this is your flaws, let's put the mirror up to you a little bit? Sure, because I think that no one else does that. And they'll get angry when I do that, even if it's a legitimate concern. How dare you, 28 championships. They're not good at handling criticism. And then you have the flip side, which is the Met fan, that if you try to get them to pick themselves up off the mat and feel better about themselves and look at the glass half full, they get angry at you for that. So it's interesting how you're dealing with it. And I think Frank's just a perfect example of that Yankee, you know, how dare you criticize me, you know, type
and, of and typical of Yankee fans, because they sleepwalk through the regular season because it's not a challenge to them. They don't have to sweat making the playoffs. It's like one guy said today in that article I read. It's like they're a team that wakes up on third base and doesn't have the dignity to run home, and then they cheat. So there's that certain sort of like oh, it's not even bully. It's just this nastiness about, like, I'm just talking to him. Why don't I criticize this and why? And I said to him, I said, because I think they're objective about the Mets, but he thinks that Michael Kay's objective about the Yankees in that warped world he's in. You know, so you can't help the guy. You can't even get a conversation going with him, because I really wasn't trying to break down announcers. I was trying to talk about the fact that when the Yankees go into the playoffs, there's this tacit assumption that if they don't win, there's something wrong with the universe. And if they lose, even if they lose a game in a series, all panic ensues because they've been sleepwalking for 5 months. So think of the Mets fan who sleeps and, you know, loses. I mean, I can, like, recite dates over the summer. The K-Rod night when I went to the Ducks game. There's a zillion nights during a Mets season that you're ready to jump off a bridge. The Yankee fans put all that off till now. So imagine a Mets fan having to take that gunpowder and put it in the cannon for 5.5, 6 months of baseball and have it all play out over, you know, a 3 or 4 week period of time. We might be as edgy as they are.
Yeah.
But we don't. If we get to October, even if we lost Game 1 of a playoff series, we'd be so ecstatic that there's Game 2 that we wouldn't really get nuts until the series is over. But Yankee fans, it's like this is – it's a crucible for them. And I think the other Yankee teams have wilted under this heat. This Yankee team's too veteran, too – they already won last year. I don't know. I don't look at this Yankee team as a team that's that invested in the obligation. I think that's come down a couple of ticks, you know, since the definitely since 04 and probably since Torrey left.
I think it really comes down to what I said when it comes to the core four. If those guys start to fade, retire, decline in production, you know, those are the guys that have been through the wars. And, like, you look back to the 90s, you know, that team, the core players, they were there from 96 on.
Look what they got
out
of these
grinders. Grinders, and then you would add around them. But now you have core players like Swisher, like Teixeira, like A-Rod. You know, do those guys have the same grinder mentality that those 90s Yankees have? Let's also face it, the competition is better. I mean, the Cleveland Indians really in the 90s in the American League were about as close as you would get to competing with the Yankees. Their pitching never was good enough. I mean, there was never really an American League competition.
Those Yankee teams against the early part of this decade's Red Sox, those 90s Yankees teams against the Manny and Ortiz, you know, 03, 04 Sox, that might have been different. They might have had a wall in the World Series every year.
Yeah, it might have been a little bit different. You know, on paper, the best teams, you know, Cleveland, I think, was right up there, like I said, but I think Atlanta was better on paper. Certainly some of the Braves teams. I mean, they had some great. I mean, if you even go to the Stratomatic cards and you look at some of those Braves teams.
They bullied the whole
The starting pitching is just tremendous. The bullpen isn't good. I wouldn't say isn't good. The bullpen's a little bit of a soft underbelly. They got good offense. They got great starting pitching. And the fact that the 96 Yankees won a championship with that team, I mean, you know, it just tells you a lot about how that team was right place, right time, and just knew how to get things done in the big spot, in the big moment. So, you know, that's a big question. I mean, to be fair to them, the competition's a little bit better now than it was in the 90s. I think this Yankees team in the 90s, you know, maybe we're not even talking about this stuff because they'd be so far and above the other playoff contenders. But again, that '90s team had really, really good starting pitching: Cohn, Pettit, David Wells, Roger Clemens. I mean, just go on and on. They didn't. They were deep. This Yankee team, even though they made changes by bringing in Vasquez, their pitching just hasn't come together. It hasn't. It's not deep, and I think they're going to rue the A.J. Burnett contract. They have to hope that these guys like Nova develop and they could slot him in at the five spot. They got a few of them, Nova, Phelps, guys like that. And they go out and they sign Cliff Lee, and then at least you guarantee yourself too deep, and then you, I guess you hope that Phil Hughes could be like their Mike Pelfrey, you know, the guy that is high-end number two but really number three on most days, which is what he really has demonstrated so far this year. So it's interesting how it seems to be the same problem this year, not enough starting pitching, and they're still going with three starters, even though they spent all this money to bring in the starters four and five,
yeah,
which was supposed to make them, you know, that much more deep, you know, interesting.
To be honest, they thought they had Cliff Lee, you know, 3-4 months ago.
Yeah, and they did, and they really did. I mean, I still cannot understand, and I guess I understand Seattle being hesitant about Adams, the second
really
baseman of Trenton, because of the ankle, broken ankle, and they didn't know how he'd come back. But to turn down Jesus Montero for Justin Smoke, who has really, when you look at his minor league numbers, hasn't done anything to match the talent that the scouts put down on paper, to make that deal, I would have made that deal for Montero. And I would have made, you know, and being around the Yankee system, just Montero at the heart of it, and then being able to find some combination of prospects around him for Cliff Lee, I would have drove Lee to the airport. I still don't understand why they made that deal , for Smoke with Texas. And in some ways, I wonder if there was pressure on Jack Z out in Seattle to not trade him to the Yankees, because at that point, it was the first week of July, this looked like excess. Burnett was not pitching well, but he was still Burnett. He had Sabathia, he had Pettit having a comeback season.
Yeah, it was before Pettit got hurt, before A.J. completely tanked.
And he had Phil Hughes, who, you know, is a guy with number one ace stuff that's really pitching in the back half of the rotation. And you look at that rotation, and you're like, oh, come on now. I mean, the Yankees are never going to lose. I mean, and they probably
would. We just got over LeBron, you know.
I mean, that was part of
a rough week.
Yeah, I mean, that, and then, you know what, it's interesting you said that, because psychologically, and I'm not saying that's why the Mariners didn't make the deal, but this was talked about throughout the country, that whole Miami thing was sticking in people's craw.
Yeah.
So this was like opening up that wound right away. And
it really was too much to take. I mean, there was a lot going on around 4th of July there, that, you know, with the Knicks not getting LeBron, and then they got Stoudemire, and then this stuff happened with Cliff Lee, and it was like one thing after the other. I remember I heard about that trade like 4 o'clock in the morning, that the Yankees had made this trade, and all of a sudden it was pending, and then it finally didn't happen.
It fell apart.
From an ethical standpoint,
I mean, you know, I just think Seattle handled that really bad. I mean, that's my whole thing.
Seattle basically, don't expect Cashman to pick up the phone for, you know, forever. That's a bridge-burning move. You don't screw the Yankees.
Well, they really dragged that out. I mean, I remember being
down in Trenton. Oh, they did. Remember, because the Yankees were in
town. I was down in Trenton when their scouts were trying to leak names, and they were even using my site as a source to leak names to see what the reaction would be. You know, look, the Yankees have a ton of talent in that system, and that trade would not have crippled them.
No, they would have absorbed it, no problem. And the funny part is that the Seattle fans still have rabbit ears for you because of the whole Cy Young stuff.
Yeah, and look, I understand their point.
Hey, Seattle, lighten up.
It goes back to my whole point that when you have a vote, you have a right to vote the way you see fit. There is no rule in the voting that says you have to use a statistical algorithm to determine your winner. That's not the rule. It has to do based on your personal – when you go vote for president of the United States, you and I can go into the booth. We may vote for the same candidate. Doesn't mean that we came to the same conclusion about why we voted for that candidate.
Right.
That doesn't mean that you voted right and I voted wrong. It also doesn't mean if you vote for the other guy that you're right and I'm wrong or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest – I mean, we'll have the same dopey debate around December 27th when the Hall of Fame stuff comes out. We'll have the same dopey debate. I could probably template the site from – I could schedule the next controversial conversation at some point. Cy Young Award sometime in November. Hall of Fame will fight, and then at some point I'll say something that they won't like, and you know I'll be hard and feathered by the statistical analyst crowd out there. So.
Well, A-Rod's up here again, so while that's going on, I'm going to wind down our conversation here with another little clip from Frank, who gave me a new nickname I didn't know I had until I heard it.
Great.
Right. Actually, Frank, it turns out that was our good friend. That was actually our good friend Dr. Mark that called in.
Oh, it was?
Yes.
Oh, good. 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 The fake doctor. Okay. Yeah. The chiropractor.
8-1, and he just said in the chat room, 8-1 Red Sox here in Game 7. That's
who cares? That's 5 years ago. Ask him when's the last time that the Mets won a championship, moron. Moron. Next time, tell me if it's him or not, Mike.
No,
I got buffaloed here.
No,
you really do.
Let me tell you, Frank, you kind of actually handled it pretty well. I got to tell you,
he's not going to get away with that garbage. He's not going to do it. And like I told him, if he wants to meet me in a dark alley anywhere, I'll challenge him. Let him bring his buddy.
What's
I'll
the old, you know, Burnt Sugar scorecard? Is that a 10-6? Maybe 10-6.
I'd rip his legs off. Not afraid of you know me, Mike. I may only have one decent eye. I'm not afraid of a single living human being. Okay, so please, let's not even go down that direction. Okay,
no, I agree with you on that.
Let's not even go there. That was Dr. Giggles. Wonderful. 8-1. Who cares?
That's it. I'm gonna open the show next week of Dr. Giggles.
You
can't
Giggles.
Make it up.
No, he was pretty pissed. And then when I and the thing was, I mean, I figured he recognized your. I mean, you call in quite a bit.
Right.
You know, we're a nice show. We get a good listening audience. We don't get a great call-in audience. So I figured maybe, you know, he would have picked up. But
no,
you know
he was
what?
Too blind with his Yankee rage. You know.
Yeah, there's a lot
but,
of rage.
It's fine. I mean, whatever, Frank. I mean, I could just Elvis him here. Let me just Elvis him quick.
What the fuck was he talking about?
There you go. That's my Frank Russo retort. I got Elvis on my side. That's my friend. I'll bring Elvis into the hour.
I'm sure we've been flagged by the Blog Talk Radio crew.
I didn't even bother to open it up because when I scrolled down, I saw all the little cherry peppers. So there's about 12 of them waiting for me here when I open it. So I'm not.
Well, what are the cherry peppers? What are those?
No, you don't get those. Well,
no.
You don't have the moderator in your chat room.
No, I really. What's cherry pepper?
It blinks. It's like this is a start chat session. The little thing blinks, and if you have. Issues that it'll like red peppers like on your emails like it means that you know you're being flagged. I'll get something later from the moderator.
Well,
because, you know,
I wish I should have red peppers and flag every time I have a technical difficulty. So you know,
exactly. I mean, if it goes both ways. Here on Blog Talk, it's never
happened.
They
do.
You're
let
sorry.
Me tell you, I will say they do a good job at follow up. I don't want to make people think they do a nice job. They do a great job at follow up. So. Don't want anyone to think I'm taking shots here. I have no.
What,
I have
podcast
enough
radio.
Yeah, I don't have. I have enough enemies. I don't want people. I don't want the people streaming my show.
You're being very philo about it. But the thing is,
I'm
the fact of the matter is,
philo about it. Look, I've been taking a beating the last 8 weeks.
Exactly, you're heading for higher ground.
Yeah. I've been to hell. Hey, listen, I spent the month of August and early September in hell. I just got out of the fire, so I'm trying to build some equity with the rest of the universe. So,
well, we've definitely tweaked the baseball gods because the Yankees just scored. So,
yes,
your midnight show is still on. It's still ETA is still pretty much
ETA
on the course.
ETA is midnight. I actually just had my co-host Neil Keefe from WFAN. We're gonna have it on for half an hour. We're gonna stay. I don't know if we're gonna stay on the full 30 minutes. We're gonna try to. Just
ooh,
have the discussion.
See
if, you know, we could see if we get some calls, and we're gonna discuss. I mean, I'm sure Roy Halladay will come up, and who knows what's gonna happen in this game. But right now,
you could be in extra innings by then. You could be looking at like one of those Red Sox games.
3 o'clock in the morning, it'll be
exactly. You could be looking at one of those marathons. But
right.
You know, well,
right.
Good luck with this because I got a feeling this is gonna be a bloodletting. I'm hoping that by the time Francesa gets his fat butt in the chair for Mic'd Up on Sunday night, that. That the Yankees are laid to rest, and we can
and then we
move
can
on
move on. We can move on to a special project. I'm
yeah, on to the campaign for Wally B. We can go
and
on.
It's the campaign of Wally B. And maybe some other fun stuff at NYBD. But Dave, another fun segment, my friend. So
yeah, we got through it. Me and you know Mike and Dr. Giggles got through
Dr.
it without Frank.
Right.
But thanks for SomaCasting with me. We'll do this again next round if they get to a game one of the ALCS to see who shows up for that. But. All we can do now is just be good Met fans and just root for them to lose like we blindly do. Like I said, I'm 10-7. Right. So I'm playing my odds here that they won't win an eighth championship in my lifetime, but, you know, it's the Yankees. What are you going to do?
We just fight the good fight. That's all we could do. Right?
That's all we can do. Just wish and hope and pray. And we have no shot in the National League, so we'll see what happens. So I'll see you in the chat room in a little while. Thanks for joining us tonight here on Summertime.
See you later, buddy. Take care.
Take care. All right, the Mike Silva. And just to kind of give you a little Steinbrenner clue.
Anyway, as I was lying in the puddle, I think I may have found a way for us to get Bonds and Griffey, and we wouldn't have to give up that much.
Well, don't tell it to me, George. Tell it to the new assistant of the general manager.
I didn't get the job.
Well, once you were dead, we couldn't just sit on our hands. We got to make a move. But you still have your old job. Of course, we'll have to dock you for the time you missed. We're running the ball club here. If I give special treatment to you, everyone will want it. Next thing you know, it's chaos. And I can tell you this. Chaos does not work for the New York Yankees. Not as long as I'm running the show.
All right, well, before they tie this up and ruin my night, because they are freaking Methuselah. They're like Rasputin. They just never go away, these bastards. Who's up? The Eco? I don't even know who's up. Like I said, the Twinkies are going to have to kind of like dance on a little bit of a tightrope here. Nice strikeout there. I think it was Tim's. Eco to Eco. That was a good changeup, too. Very Santana-esque. Whip. So the Yankees down 2-1, very much a winnable game. First and second, two away. I think it's the sixth inning. I feel like Sterling. The sixth or the seventh? I can't even read that. No, sixth. Okay. Two outs, 3-1. 3-1. I'm sorry. I am Sterling. So I'm going to leave it there. We'll get out of here before this is over. So we'll be back next week with a little post-Coco little review. And let's get this cranked up again. Thanks for Mike Silva from New York Baseball Digest for joining us here. And my little homage to Frank Russo, you crazy Yankee fan, you. I hope you suffer as I bob away here. Everybody else, join me over at summerspace.org. Thank you for joining us this week. We've been spending good time in our space. Travel light through the darkness. Hi! Spiral on, Sapiens.